Opening narration.
The Akhatra Foundation presents The Akhatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhatra AI.
Introduction.
Okay, so today we're doing a deep dive into a figure many people feel they know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but we're looking at him through a really specific, powerful lens.
That's right. We're focusing on David Garrow's Pulitzer Prize-winning biography, Bearing the Cross, Martin Luther King Jr. and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. It's just a monumental piece of work.
Monumental is the word. And you might think, okay, MLK, the icon, the orator, we know the story. But Garrow, he really peels back the layers, doesn't he?
He absolutely does. He strips away the myth, really, to show us a profoundly human figure, someone often tormented, carrying an incredible weight.
Which is right there in the title, Bearing the Cross. Our goal here isn't to diminish him, but to understand the sheer complexity of the man behind the movement. Not a saint, but a leader facing immense personal and historical duties.
And Garrow challenges us, you know. He asks how this man, who we learn was plagued by self-doubt, depression, serious personal struggles, how did he lead this massive movement to dismantle segregation?
Yeah, it's a central question.
And Garrow's answer, essentially, is that King's strength wasn't about not having weaknesses. It was about his ability to push forward despite them. It really makes you, the listener, think. What does leadership look like when you're carrying huge personal burdens?
And Garrow had this unique access, didn't he?
Yeah.
Thousands of pages of FBI wiretaps, government documents, stuff nobody had really seen like that before.
Exactly. So this book isn't just, you know, retelling the famous speeches. It's this unvarnished day-by-day look at the movement from Montgomery in 55 right up to Memphis in 68.
You get the tactics, the SCLC's internal fights, the
right.
Fundraising stress, the real grinding costs of it all.
Yeah, the sheer human costs.
The chronological journey.
Let's talk about that title again, Bearing the Cross. Garrow makes it clear this wasn't just symbolic, it was, well, literal suffering, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Leadership for King was suffering. You're talking constant death threats, nonstop travel, trying to mediate disputes within his own team, which were often pretty intense.
And the fundraising. Always the fundraising. Plus the weight of being this global symbol.
Right. Garrow shows King often felt trapped. He apparently yearned for a quiet life, just being a pastor. But he felt this inescapable calling, a divine or historical obligation he just couldn't ignore.
Garrow puts it really powerfully. He calls King a driven, oftentimes tortured individual who felt himself compelled to play a historical role he had not sought.
That framing gives you a much richer, maybe more painful, but definitely more empathetic view of his public courage. You see the internal battles behind the brave face.
So let's track that journey. It starts in Montgomery, right? He's young, just 26, new pastor in town.
Yeah, and then Rosa Parks makes her stand, and suddenly he's thrust into leading the bus boycott. Almost out of nowhere.
And Garrow shows him initially hesitant, kind of growing into the role.
Exactly. You see him forging that philosophy of nonviolent direct action right there in the thick of it. It wasn't passive. You know, it's about creating this moral confrontation.
A grassroots thing. And he was the one called to guide it.
And his philosophy wasn't just theory. It was tested, hardened in Montgomery. That success led to founding the SCLC. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
But it wasn't smooth sailing right after Montgomery.
Not at all. Garrow's clear. The SCLC really struggled for years after that. They didn't have many big, tangible wins. It shows you, even these world-changing movements have really difficult, uncertain beginnings.
Okay, so Montgomery's a success, but then comes Albany, Georgia, and that was different.
Oh, yeah. Albany was pretty much a strategic failure. Garrow breaks it down really well.
What went wrong there?
Well, the police chief, Lori Pritchett, was smart. He studied their tactics. He made sure arrests were orderly, avoided the kind of brutal violence that usually got national attention and federal sympathy.
So he denied them the moral high ground, visually speaking.
Kind of. He blunted their main strategic tool at the time. King and the SCLC left Albany without a clear victory. Garrow describes it as a really humbling experience for King. A tough lesson.
What a lesson learned.
A crucial one. Albany taught them that just protesting segregation generally wasn't focused enough. They needed specific targets, unjust laws, and they needed to basically force a reaction from resistant officials to compel the federal government to step in.
So that failure directly informs the next big campaign.
Absolutely. They took those lessons straight to Birmingham. Project C for confrontation. They planned it meticulously.
And they knew the commissioner, Bull Connor,
would overreact. They counted on it, and he did, spectacularly. The dogs, the fire hoses, those images went global.
And that shock, that moral outrage, that's what pushed the Civil Rights Act of 1964 forward.
Precisely. And while King was jailed in Birmingham, that's when he wrote the letter from Birmingham jail.
Which Garrow frames not just as this amazing piece of writing, but strategically vital.
Yes, exactly. It laid out the moral philosophy, the justification for civil disobedience, the urgency. It became this key document for the movement, solidifying King's role.
Okay, so Birmingham's a strategic triumph. Then comes the March on Washington. The absolute peak, you'd think.
In terms of public support and visibility, yes. The I Have a Dream speech, iconic. But Garrow, again, takes you behind the scenes. Lots of pressure, intense negotiations, trying to keep unity even at that high point.
And while King's influence is peaking, something else is ramping up, right? The FBI.
Oh, massively. It's a disturbing part of the book. J. Edgar Hoover becomes obsessed. Surveillance intensifies, wiretaps everywhere.
And they use recordings of his private life.
Yeah, Garrow details this vicious campaign to blackmail him, discredit him using his personal failings. The psychological toll on King must have been unimaginable. Another heavy layer on that cross he was bearing.
Just relentless pressure. Then comes Selma.
Selma, focusing on voting rights. And again, horrific violence with Bloody Sunday. The attack on the marchers shocked the nation all over again.
And that leads to the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
Right, which Garrow argues kind of marks the end of the classic phase of the movement. They'd achieved these huge legislative goals against Jim Crow in the South.
But King's vision started to shift after 65, didn't it?
Dramatically. He realized, okay, we have legal rights, but what about economic justice? Garrow quotes him saying something like, "What good is sitting at a lunch counter if you can't afford a hamburger?"
That's powerful. It's about integrating people into the economy, not just the lunch counter.
Exactly. So that led them to Chicago, the Chicago Freedom Movement, trying to tackle housing and job discrimination in the North.
And that was much harder.
Much harder. The tactics that worked against Bull Connor didn't work as well against Mayor Daley's political machine and the more subtle systemic racism in the North. It wasn't overt laws, it was entrenched systems. Garrow shows it as largely unsuccessful, revealing the limits of their previous model.
And around this time, he takes his stance against the Vietnam War.
Yes, a hugely courageous, but also incredibly controversial decision. It alienated him from President Johnson. Many allies, even some within the civil rights movement itself.
So Garrow paints a picture of him becoming more radical on economics, but also more isolated, more exhausted.
Definitely profoundly exhausted, physically, emotionally. Garrow talks about severe depression during this period, the weight of it all, the criticism, the complexity of the new challenges. It was immense.
Being his final effort, the Poor People's Campaign.
Trying to build this multiracial coalition focused on economic justice. It was while supporting striking sanitation workers in Memphis, a perfect symbol of that economic fight, that he gave the mountaintop speech.
And the next day?
The next day, April 4th, 1968, he was assassinated. Garrow ends by chronicling just the devastating impact of that loss.
Core philosophy and values.
So looking back at that whole journey, what was really driving him? What was at the core? Obviously nonviolence. But Garrow shows it as more than just a belief, right?
Absolutely. Nonviolence for King, as Garrow portrays it, was a deeply held spiritual conviction rooted in his Christian faith. But it was also a very deliberate, very strategic tool.
This idea of creative tension.
Exactly. It wasn't passive acceptance. It was about actively, nonviolently confronting injustice to make it impossible to ignore, to create a crisis that authorities had to respond to. It required immense discipline and courage from the protesters.
And then there's that sense of inescapable duty we talked about, that feeling he had to play this role.
Yes, despite his personal desires, despite the toll it took, Garrow suggests this deep-seated belief that he was an instrument of, well, maybe God's will, or certainly of history. That sense of obligation seems central.
And later, that broadening focus on economic justice, it became fundamental to his vision of true equality.
It really did. He saw the interconnectedness of racism, poverty, and militarism. His philosophy evolved to see that ending segregation was just the first step. Real freedom required economic opportunity and a fundamental shift in societal values.
Three pivotal turning points.
If we had to pick, say, three pivotal turning points from Garrow's account that really shifted things for King and the movement, what would they be?
Okay. Well, the first has to be Montgomery, doesn't it?
The very beginning.
Yeah. Suddenly this young pastor is leading a citywide boycott. He finds his voice, develops his core strategy of nonviolent resistance, and they achieve this incredible landmark victory against segregation. It launches him, it launches the SCLC, it sets the whole course. That's definitely number one.
Okay, Montgomery as the launch pad. What's next? Maybe the shift from Albany's failure to Birmingham's success.
I think that's a great choice. Albany was this harsh lesson, right? It showed the limits of their early approach. But then they learned from it. They meticulously planned Birmingham, targeting Bull Connor's expected reaction.
And it worked.
It worked spectacularly. The images shocked the world, forced federal action with the Civil Rights Act, and King's letter from Birmingham jail during that time became this defining text. It showed strategic adaptation, resilience after failure, and led to a massive triumph. That's a huge turning point.
Okay, so Montgomery, then the Albany-Birmingham sequence. For a third, maybe the period after 1965, the shift north, Vietnam.
That feels right, because after the big legislative win, Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, King pivots. He takes on economic injustice in Chicago, which proves way harder, more complex.
And the Vietnam stance.
And the Vietnam stance, which cost him so much support, but showed his unwavering conscience. This period marks a turn towards tackling deeper systemic issues, facing new kinds of opposition, and experiencing profound exhaustion and isolation. It reveals the escalating costs and complexity of his widening vision. It's a different, perhaps darker, but essential turning point.
Human lessons and reflection.
So stepping back from the history, what does Garrow's portrayal teach us? What are the sort of human lessons here? The humanization aspect is huge, right?
It really is. Garrow doesn't shy away from King's flaws, the plagiarism, the extramarital affairs, but he presents them not to tear King down, but to show the full person.
And he argues the guilt King felt, especially with the FBI weaponizing it, actually makes his public courage more astounding.
Exactly. Garrow calls him a deeply pained and guilt-ridden man, more of a tormented figure than a happy one. It shatters that simple saintly image.
And what does that teach us? Maybe about leadership or just being human under pressure?
I think it shows that leadership, especially moral leadership in incredibly tough circumstances, doesn't require perfection. It requires resilience. It requires the ability to function, to lead, despite flaws, despite doubts, despite immense external attacks and internal struggles.
It makes his achievement seem even greater in a way.
It does. It underscores that history isn't made by flawless heroes on pedestals, but by complex, struggling human beings who somehow find the strength to carry on.
We also learned about the sheer strategic effort involved, that nonviolence wasn't just passive waiting.
Not at all. Garrow shows it as this incredibly demanding, highly disciplined, strategically planned campaign of creative tension. It took immense planning by the SCLC, incredible bravery from the participants. It was an active force for change.
And that final lesson from Chicago, changing laws versus changing systems.
Yeah, that's a really sobering takeaway that feels incredibly relevant today. Overturning Jim Crow laws was monumental, but tackling deeply ingrained economic inequality, systemic racism, subtle prejudice, that's a different, maybe even harder battle. King's struggles in the North highlighted that reality.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into bearing the cross, if you had to distill it down for our listeners, what are three key takeaways? Let's say one emotional, one intellectual, and one universal.
All right. For an emotional insight, I think is the profound empathy Garrow allows us for King. Understanding the immense personal suffering, the doubts, the depression, the threats, the guilt, the exhaustion that lay beneath the public image. It connects you to his struggle on a deeply human level.
Yeah, feeling the weight of that cross. Okay, an intellectual insight.
Intellectually, I'd say it's the understanding of nonviolent direct action as a strategic political tool. Garrow meticulously shows how it was developed, adapted, and deployed by King and the SCLC, not just as a moral stance, but as a calculated method to disrupt the status quo and compel change. It wasn't just hoping for the best.
Right. The creative tension as a planned strategy. Got it. And finally, a universal insight, something anyone can take away.
Maybe the most universal insight is that extraordinary achievements often come from ordinary, flawed human beings pushing through immense adversity. King wasn't a demigod. He was burdened, imperfect, often exhausted. His greatness lies not in an absence of weakness, but in his profound courage and resilience in spite of it. It tells us that our own struggles don't necessarily disqualify us from making a difference.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.